Talk given Saturday, 7th February 1976. I wonder if you have ever watched the movements of the hands of a clock as it keeps time, as we say. If you have the opportunity and can see those hands moving throughout an hour, you will find that the two hands make all sorts of patterns of symmetry as they move. And in the positions of symmetry, if you are very watchful, you may notice that your sense of time is no longer a sense of a mechanical movement, but of a rhythm of life. And you will also, in a curious way, find that the rhythm of your breath, which is your life rhythm in its most concrete form, will be in tune with that life rhythm represented by the passage of time. We are so conditioned, because of this machine called the clock, that we think of time as an undeviating, mechanical, absolutely measurable movement. It isn't that. Time itself is a pulsation, a rhythm. And when you are in tune with that rhythm, you will discover that the rhythm of time, when you are aware of it, during those moments that your own breath rhythm is properly established, is the rhythm of eternity itself, the pulse of eternity. Eternity is the immeasurable. You cannot define it. It isn't a thing. It is neither space nor time in itself. It is the transcendental dimension of creative activity within which we actually live and move and have our being. That is eternity. We make the distinction between eternity and time because, constituted as we are, and unawakened as we are, and conditioned as we are from our birth onwards, we are conscious only in terms of unidirectional time. 6 o'clock in the morning, time to get up, 7 o'clock breakfast, 8 o'clock this, etc. till the day is done. And when the day is done, that has become the past, irrevocably gone forever. Eternity knows no such limitation. If your life rhythm, and I'm going to say again, your breath rhythm, is in tune with that rhythm of eternity, nothing has ever gone, nothing has yet to come. There is only the immediate present in all its fullness, in all its totality. But it is a fullness and a totality that cannot be defined. You can't make pictures of it. You can't give descriptions of it. The transcendent is beyond description. Let me repeat again. There is no difference between the transcendent and what people commonly call the not transcendent. Absolutely none. The difference lies in my own mode of awareness. If I am not developed in that way, if I am unawake, to put it in the, to use the best possible word, if I am less than fully human, then I am aware of existence in this mode which does not belong to what we commonly call the transcendent. It's very important to realize this. What changes is our own mode of awareness. The reality, the totality, is just what it is. It is not amenable to fixed description, which is truth forever and ever. But if you and I are really concerned about discovering the purpose of our existence in the world, and in what manner we shall live in order that this purpose could move towards fruition in us, if we are really concerned with this, then we are really concerned with the heart of religion, with transcendence, with complete humanity. There's nothing superhuman or supernatural or any such thing about it. It seems superhuman because we are plagued with this inveterate habit of comparing, of measuring. That is why we always put God up there, the devil down below, and myself in between somewhere, hovering this way and the other, and torn to bits in the process. Now, in the rhythm of our own organic life lies the secret of realization. It lies everywhere. It lies in a thousand different ways within ourselves and outside ourselves. But this is one of the simple factual ways in which it lies within us. A concrete physical way. The breathing. The rhythm of the breathing. Now I mention this because, as we all know, yoga is spreading more and more rapidly throughout the Western world. And one aspect of what constitutes yoga is known as pranayama, translated rather poorly as the control of the breath. Look at it another way. Pranayama in actual practice means that you give yourself to the living rhythm of your own breathing. It's like a person, a rider in a forest who has lost his way. Finally, he gives up trying to direct the horse, and the horse somehow takes him to safety. You give yourself to something which is immensely greater and surer than your conscious mind. So, consider this question of pranayama, the rhythm of the breath. Now, if one doesn't deliberately time the breathing, counting 1, 2, 3, 4 in and so many for out and all the rest of it, these are all little techniques which should bring about certain results. True enough. But it is important to understand the heart of the matter. As I've said so often, set your sights on transcendence and all the rest will come right. Because if your sights are not set on transcendence, whatever you direct your energies towards, a goal which is thought out, or an expectation, or a hope, will invariably be a will-o'-the-wisp. Only reality is reality, sounds a truism. But reality being the nondescript, I cannot lay down that reality shall be so and so for me. Reality will take me along if I let it, if I know the art of letting it. So now, let the breathing throughout the day find its own natural rhythm. If you're walking, your breathing will have a certain rhythm. If you walk faster, it will have a different rhythm. If you run, it will have a different rhythm. If you get frightened, it will have a different rhythm. If you're happy, if you're in an exalted mood, If you're in depression, your breathing will have a different rhythm corresponding to that state. So observe this rhythm of the breathing in the different states and throughout your different activities. And in course of time, it may take some days, it may take weeks, it may take months or years even. In course of time, you will really be established in your own individual breath rhythm. Now this is very important, because as long as you are established in your own breath rhythm, a changing rhythm throughout the activities of the day, but insofar as you are established in your own breath rhythm, your thinking, feeling, speaking, doing will be as free as each of these can possibly be from all taint of selfness. In the rhythmic state, you are at peace. However active you are, that activity will be perfect activity. It will not be a strain. It will be an activity which is not expressive of conflicts, of confusions, of fears, and so forth. In that rhythmic state, you will find that all preoccupation with self will have vanished. You will be paying full attention to the immediate now in all its fullness, from moment to moment. And this attentiveness to the immediate now in all its fullness is the realization of eternity through you. The transcendent sees, hears, tastes, touches, thinks, speaks, and feels through you in that state. And that is the fully human state. The realized yogi is that kind of person. The person who has come to full fruition religiously is that kind of person. So that there is no self-seeking whatsoever, either consciously or in the deeps of the unconscious. For the first time, and as long as he lives, the mind is a unified whole. This is the pure mind, the purified mind. See the significance of it. when you see something and your breath rhythm, your total life rhythm also, therefore, not only the breath, but the rhythm of life expressed through you in terms of mind, is also perfect. It's all there. So that when you see the total life rhythm is in harmony with that seeing, you will see everyone, everything quite differently from the ordinary way in which you see that person. For the first time, you will truly see the person. For the first time, you will hear the song of the bird, or the voice of a man, or whatever it is, and so on. Through each and every sense, if and when it functions in perfect harmony with this breath rhythm, there will be the perfect human living. Don't try to define that perfection. Don't make pictures of it. That it will be also nice and pleasant. If you, the Holy One, the perfected Holy One, were in Guatemala in the midst of this earthquake, you will be suffering agonies, you will be blown to bits or whatever it is. Make no mistake about such things. These are pictures which we make, rigid pictures of an ought to be, which is called perfection or fruition. But if this breath rhythm is established throughout every single moment, you will find that you're living in eternity from moment to moment, in the eternal now. It will have a real, factual meaning then, not just a marvelous mystical phrase or a poetical expression or something which attracts you or repels you, flatters your vanity or puffs up your ego or anything. Nothing of the sort. All that is just completely transcended. In your awareness, in nothing else. But if it is completely transcended in your awareness, it is a total change, a total transformation. That is the meaning of human fulfillment. Human fulfillment, which is identical with divine fulfillment. Those who are interested in Buddhist teaching, for instance, know that famous discourse which is known as called the Anapanasati, mindfulness with regard to the breathing. If you read that actual discourse, you will find it a little bit perplexing if you're honest with yourself. It says, and then the disciple takes in a short breath, and he knows that he's taking in a short breath, and consciously he breathes out that short breath, and so forth. The words convey nothing really special. Then it goes on to suggest that as you breathe in, you think of any particular quality, any particular virtue, if you like. And you're supposed to build in that virtue into you. true enough. Certain things will happen. But if you stick only to that, you will have quite missed the point. The point, as far as I'm aware, has never been lucidly presented yet. That is why I'm speaking so very slowly today, so that you get the idea, so that the mind can really absorb the heart, the inner meaning of this rhythm of the breath and what it stands for. Just try and feel your own breath rhythm at this moment. It'll be different from everybody else's. But be fully awake, intensely awake to it. Don't let its soporific tendency overwhelm you. Otherwise, you'll just go to sleep. Now, if you really feel awake, keeping that breath rhythm, just look at any object in the room. And you will find that you look at it with an intensity and a clarity which normally you don't experience. And the reason for that, preoccupation with self is no longer interfering with the act of total seeing. When there is the fullness of seeing or hearing or tasting or speaking or feeling or thinking, when there is the fullness of it, all isolative self-consciousness has disappeared. And there is pure consciousness, pure awareness. And in this state, your intelligence is really at work. It is so much at work that if you practice it regularly, you will find that you begin to be free of all the conditioning of the mind which has been associated with the particular object you are looking at or the particular person you are looking at. Now, if that freedom is there, then you will see with the eye of compassion, with the eye of affection. And so too with your hearing, your touching, your tasting, your conversing, and every single relationship will be touched by transcendence throughout. Perhaps these are very strange things to hear. the hard-headed, practical man of the world, the intelligent man in the street, as we say sometimes, will say, not unjustifiably, what extraordinary mumbo-jumbo is all this? A whole farrago of nonsense. Well, of course it is a farrago of nonsense for him, because he has his criteria and standards of sense. But he has never challenged those criteria and standards. He has never investigated whether, as the human individual grows to the fullness of his human being and nature, changes take place which may make what he thought sound good sense sheer nonsense. And in fact, the history of the world is evidence that mankind, the intelligent man in the street, has not been particularly intelligent or sensible. Isn't that so? But if he can escape his thraldom to time and circumstance, which means fundamentally his thraldom to selfness, to self-preoccupation, to self-orientation, then he will find that he himself is in a totally different dimension of being and consciousness. He will be a harmony within himself. And then he will be the true individual, the undivided, the unfragmented in his own psychophysical being. Not only unified within his own being, but also unified in relationship with his entire environment, whatever that may be. If then you can breathe this way, the real pranayama has been realized. You have given yourself livingly to the totality of life and are vibrating in tune with it. This is one of the deep meanings of what in the ancient scriptures they called the sacrifice of the man. The Purusha Medha. Anthropologists and others have investigated the customs of dying races and so on, and found all kinds of terrible practices. We know how the Druids are supposed to have sacrificed human beings and so forth, you see, and all that sort of stuff. The sacrifice of the man has nothing to do with that. Horror or cruelty. It is what you yourself realize when your breath rhythm is in tune with the universal life rhythm. Because the whole process of breathing is a process of burning away. Now you've got your sacrifice. Not building up a terrible pyre and setting it alight and throwing a live creature into it. So you see, this is an aspect of yoga which has to be well understood, carefully understood. Otherwise, all the practices that one carries out will be spoilt by the absence of right motivation. Right, not because I have seen that this is the right and I am going to do it, but because transcendence itself is taking you along. Underneath are the everlasting arms, and it takes you along that current of life, and you live as the perfected human being.